the Goldberg Variations, a Hannibal fic, written by This Is the Family Business, read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid. Warnings for canon-typical violence and cannibalism, torture, mutilation, amputation, manipulation, Stockholm Syndrome, body horror, references to suicide, and references to forced drug use. Chapter 1. Bach, Tiersen, and Arabesque 1. He can hear Goldberg Variations being played faintly in the distance. Will squeezes his eyes closed, tightens his grip in the expensive sheets colored like clotted blood, tries not to wonder what Hannibal will take from him next. Hannibal only plays Bach when he's angry, and he only plays Goldberg when he's planning something new and horrifying to do. Maybe it has nothing to do with him, Will hopes. Maybe this Variations was dedicated to someone else. He doesn't have much left for Hannibal to take. Hannibal plays Pachelbel's Canon for the next 2 days, and Will nearly cries with relief. The Goldberg Variations were not for him after all. Pachelbel is quiet peace, Hannibal carrying him down from his bedroom and arranging him at the dining room table and feeding him foods with names Will can't pronounce, instead of the usual cold leftover on a plastic tray. And Will ignores the voice in his head that wonders whose he's eating tonight, because the last time Will spoke out of turn, Hannibal had played the Variations on his piano until he finally took Will's left hand in retaliation. Will has mastered the art of ignoring those voices in his head quickly, sitting silently unless Hannibal addresses him, faking smiles on cue, learning the difference between what it meant for him when Hannibal chose to play his music or to put on a record. It always meant good things when Hannibal sketched while listening to opera, Will learned, and bad things when he played Goldberg Variations on the piano. For a while, lying in a pain-medicated high in Hannibal's massive black four-poster bed, in a room the color of drying blood, Will had thought this might have been hell. Hannibal's maroon-tinted eyes distorted into the glowing red stare of the devil. He thought that he'd died, and this was his eternal punishment for crimes unknown. But it wasn't, because once the haze of pain medication had faded, Will realized with horror that this wasn't just a fever dream. Hannibal Lecter was the Chesapeake Ripper, and Will was lying in his Egyptian cotton sheets, unable to do anything. Hannibal had taken his legs, said it was because Will had been involved in a hit and run when he'd tried to escape when he'd finally figured it all out. Hannibal had even been so courteous as to show him the video footage from the security camera at his front door, let Will watch himself flee into the street and get flung across the asphalt, Hannibal rushing to his prone body as the anonymous silver Honda tore away from the scene, again and again, until Will had quietly begged him to stop playing it. Will wasn't a surgeon, and he couldn't tell how injured he'd really been from the grainy footage of the accident, but he knew it hadn't been necessary for Hannibal to amputate both of his legs from the knee down. Will didn't need to be an empath to be able to reach into Hannibal's mind, know that it was to keep him from running. This wasn't hell. This was just a life controlled by one of its monsters. Even when Hannibal left Will alone in the house while he was at work, Will wasn't truly alone. When Hannibal had to leave Will alone, he left Will in bed, tucked him in like a small child. If he was in a merciful mood, he might leave Will a book to read, open the blackout curtains across the dim hallway to let Will have some sunlight if the weather was nice, give Will a notebook and pen to entertain himself with. If he was in a wicked mood, a Bach mood, he'd turn off all the house lights, leave Will in utter darkness with nothing but his mind for company. Hannibal had an expensive, top-of-line security system that would go off any of the doors or windows to the outside where even so much as nudged open a fraction of an inch. There weren't even any phones or computers in the house Will could use. Hannibal didn't have a house phone, and he kept his cell phone and computer locked away in the study when he wasn't using them. Even though he knew Will couldn't move from the bedroom without someone to help, Hannibal was meticulous in keeping him from escape. The first night Hannibal had taken Will out of his room, he had mechanically stripped Will out of the pale green hospital gown and dressed him in the same plaid button-up and oatmeal-colored sweater outfit Will had been wearing when he'd tried to tell Hannibal he knew. The pants, of course, had been tailored into shorts, stopping right above the white sterile bandages around the stumps of his knees. Will had been embarrassed at first by the intimacy of being dressed and undressed by someone else, but Hannibal hadn't said a single word, his expression flat and unreadable, and Will found out quickly that it was easier if he let his mind wander, lying limp like a life-sized doll. Will hadn't known yet what he now liked to think of the rules of the dinner table, so he'd stabbed his fork into the plate of grayish-pink cutlets in their too vivid red sauce with more force than necessary, ignoring the warning look Hannibal gave him from his place at the head of the table. "Who's on the menu tonight?" Will muttered, louder than he'd intended. Hannibal's knuckles turned white where they gripped his fork. "There is no need to mock my cooking, Will. I am just attempting to extend a modicum of courtesy to you." "Courtesy? Courtesy? I'm pretty sure it's not courteous to hold someone hostage and amputate their legs." "To the contrary, Will. I do not have to keep you alive. Keeping you alive is courteous. You said it yourself. I am the Chesapeake Ripper. I could kill you any time I desire, but I have not. Do not mistake my courtesy for mercy." "You're not going to get away with this, you know. I'm sure they're looking for me." "Who is looking for you, Will? The only witness to your accident were myself, you, and the driver of that car. And I imagine that driver is quite reluctant to admit to being involved in a hit and run." "Alana and Jack?" "How long have you been here, Will?"
2 weeks, maybe, at most."
"Incorrect. You have been here a month, though you were not conscious for most of it. You are very imprudent in approaching me without informing anyone of your plans, Will. Having been on the police force, I assume you know that after a person is missing for over 48 hours, the case is considered to be cold. You are dead to the rest of the world, Will." A new form of terror, ice cold and crippling, sank to the pit of Will's stomach. He had found it all too easy to imagine Hannibal, in one of his neat black suits, faking concern to Jack, quietly reassuring Alana with comforting lies. "You do not exist outside of this house. Is that understandable?" Will closed his eyes for a moment and tried not to let the horror show in his face. "You will answer when you are spoken to, Will. You will listen to me now." He didn't respond. Hannibal carried him roughly upstairs and tossed him on the bed to lie in the pitch dark, while Hannibal cleared the table of their now spotless dinner and played the variations for 2 straight hours. Will woke up the next morning with a clean white bandage where his left pinky and index finger should have been. After that, Will did his best to listen to Hannibal. Debussy's Arabesque won, playing on the speakers, and the smell of freshly baked bread awakens Will one Sunday morning. Relief floods his veins. Arabesque 1 is good. Arabesque 1 means that Hannibal will be gentle today, won't threaten to take Will's arms and keep him conscious while he does it. Arabesque 1 means Hannibal will feed him fresh food and not leftovers, will at least put him under if he decides to take anything else from Will. Hannibal opens the bedroom door with a smile, lets the sunlight in from the hallways, holding a tray of fresh bread and hot coffee, and for a moment, Will lets himself forget about everything he has lost, and pretends that Hannibal is still his friend, still trying to protect him and help him. It is easier than looking at the monster hiding behind his red-brown eyes. Hannibal is listening to something new on his record player, and it sets Will on edge when he strains to hear it behind the bedroom door as he wakes from his afternoon nap. It's piano, soft, classical, bitter, different from the anger Will now hears between the notes of Bach or the happiness in Pachelbel.
"It's good to see you, Dr. Bloom," Hannibal says, opening the door to the tinkling chime of the alarm system,
and Will can feel his pulse spike. Alana is here. Alana is in Hannibal's house. She could rescue him.
"Well, thank you for inviting me over, Dr. Lecter."
God, her voice sounds better than Beethoven's Moonlit Sonata to Will.
It is my pleasure, as always.
Will can't hear them anymore. Just the clicking of Alana's heels on the floor as Hannibal leads her into the dining room. But even that is enough to send hope spiking. He's mastered how to roll out of bed safely and how to get down the staircase. But he can't open the door without making noise enough to alert Hannibal. And what could he say to Alana? Would she even recognize him? Sallow and gaunt, missing both of his legs and his left arm to just below the shoulder? No pinky finger on his right hand? Hannibal at least shaved for him and cut his hair. But it had been 4 months since Will had last seen the outside world, and he'd grown pale and thin since. Even if Alana did recognize him, what could she do? Hannibal would probably kill her. Probably, maybe kill him too. All the hope that he'd felt moments before vanishes. This was a new form of torture then, taunting Will with his freedom and old life, making sure Will understood how thoroughly he had been imprisoned. Will later learns the song is Tiersen's Compé de un Atour était la place Médille, and that Hannibal only plays it when he wants to injure in all the non-physical ways. There are small mercies, though. Hannibal sleeps alone in what used to be the guest bedroom, and he doesn't display any interest in sex at all. When Hannibal's in one of his kinder moods, Will has learned to forget that Hannibal is a monster, and to act like what Hannibal offers is genuine affection. And when Hannibal is especially dark, Will has learned to let his mind go until he's no more than an oversized doll. It's gotten so that in those hours of Tiersen and Bach, Will just reminds himself that every part Hannibal takes from him is one less he could have taken from someone else. And then he can drift away. Ignore the dread and terror Hannibal has reduced his life to. Jack Crawford finds Will's arm and cell phone in the same observatory he found Miriam Lass's, exactly half a year after Will went missing. The cell phone rang, but it was the same message as Miriam's, just recorded in Will's voice. Please for help that didn't come in time. The Ripper has taken Will. Chapter 2. Faust. Hannibal is growing restless, has been alternating between Bach and Tiersen and Mozart and Dvorak, without even finishing a piece for the past 2 days. Carrying Will down to dinner, only to put him back in bed, arranging him on the settee in his study to stare in silence at each place he has cut Will down. It petrifies Will. Hannibal Lecter is never unstable, never unsure, never flustered. But by the fifth time Will has listened to him stop playing Compétit de un ater été, and switch to Lacrimosa, Will wonders if he misjudged Hannibal somehow, if the doctor had reached the ends of his nerves. Sunday is silent, with no clavier or piano, or Glenn Gould on the speakers to tell Will what kind of day it was going to be, and Hannibal only comes into Will's room to put him on an IV drip of unknown contents. The brutality of Hannibal's anger was almost preferable to this sudden upset, because Will could judge that anger, could fixate his mind on guessing what Hannibal would take from him, and at least then Will could have gauged Hannibal's mood from listening to the music that had previously filled the house. The silence is as terrifying as Hannibal's change in temperaments. Will wakes up in total darkness, pain shooting in the phantom space his right arm used to fill. He swallows down the panic, lets his mind wander to the opening chords of Goldberg Variations, and tries to get his bearings. Wherever he is, it's pitch black, small. He's lying on his back on what feels like a rough, industrial-quality rug. So perhaps this is a closet somewhere. He can hear muffled footsteps and two voices in the distance. He's somewhere with people, then. Not buried alive or anything similar. And Hannibal had clearly taken his arm less than a full day ago, judging from the sensations and the careful way the bandages wrapped around Will's torso under the hospital gown Hannibal dressed him in after another amputation. So wherever he is, it couldn't have been too far from Hannibal's house. There's something around Will's jaw, covering his mouth and nose, masking the gag that Hannibal had shoved in his mouth. When he nudges his chin against his own shoulder, it feels like papery fabric.
A surgeon's ventilation mask, then? I'm so sorry for the inconvenience, Dr. Lecter. Really. Opening up an old case, though. You gotta follow the procedures to a T. That's Jack's voice, and Will never thought he'd almost weep at the sound of Jack Crawford's voice. But there he is. I understand. I was one of the last people seen with Will who did not have a witness to my alibi. You know me personally, and so you know I would never have harmed Will. But in the blind eyes of the law, I am a perfect suspect, and you are right to search my properties. Hannibal was with Jack, so this had to be Hannibal's office then. And this was a search? They were looking for him? Is that why Hannibal had been acting so strange? Because they were looking for Will again? Graham was a good man, you know. Deserved hell of a lot more than a fucking plaque at Quantico and an ASPCA donation fund. Couldn't even find the rest of his damn body to bury it. The best way we can honor Will now is by catching the Ripper. Let us not have allowed Will to give his life in vain. They thought he was dead. They thought the Chesapeake Ripper had killed him. Had Hannibal left one of the limbs he'd taken in the same observatory Miriam Lassus had been in? They didn't know. Will was right here, hidden away in some closet of Hannibal's office, right there, only steps away from Jack. So close that if Will could have pulled out the gag stuffed in his mouth and shouted, Jack would have heard it. And there was nothing Will could do besides listen, once again, trapped like a moth pinned to a display board, left with nothing to struggle, dead to everyone but Hannibal.
Thank you for behaving, Hannibal says mildly, opening the door to the coat closet in his office and picking Will up off the floor. I was worried you might try to cause trouble. He sets Will down in a wheelchair in the corner, covers his waist and thighs with the hospital-issue blue blanket. All part of the disguise, Will recognizes. There is no need to struggle now. No one is going to come back. Will closes his eyes against the stinging threat of tears as Hannibal eases a needle full of sedative into his skin. The music returns, but Hannibal does not play it. It is only Glenn Gloud on vinyl or the opera on the speakers. It does nothing to soothe the now constant dread Will is drowning in, now unable to feed himself or sit up or even drag himself around now, dependent on Hannibal for everything. The darker part of Will's mind, the part he struggles so hard to ignore, wonders if it's because Hannibal wants him that way, or if it's because Hannibal is planning something bigger.
Do you have feelings for me, Will? Hannibal asks quietly, looking up from the sketch on his desk to where he has carefully arranged Will on the settee in the sun-filled study.
No.
There is no sense in lying. Will has begun to dream of death at night, thoughts of angering Hannibal to his breaking point, but he isn't sure that Hannibal would kill him. Hannibal exhales slowly and picks up a different pencil.
Did you once?
No. Maybe. I could have, maybe, after a while. And you didn't kill people.
Do you still not find me interesting?
I find you sick and broken.
I could make you love me, Hannibal says, pondering slowly.
And you would never know any difference.
But you haven't.
Your mind is what is most precious to me, Will. I fear that if I took away that autonomy, you would lose your tenuous grip on your mind, and there would be nothing left of importance to me.
There would be nothing left of importance to you, Will deadpans.
Yes.
Will relaxes unnoticeably into the settee. This is his life, then. Wings pinned inside a shadow box like a dying moth. Like he was only a particularly interesting specimen for Hannibal to study at his leisure.
If I pretend to love you, would you take me outside sometimes?
Hannibal looks back up from his drawing.
Those are not equivalent things, Will.
You want someone to love you. You want me to find you interesting. You clearly wanted me to have feelings for you. You tried to get us both to be Abigail's adoptive fathers.
So you would act like you cared for me if I took you outside occasionally.
Hannibal doesn't sound angry, which is good. Great, even. No variations. Just Faust playing in the background. Twice a week. Will doesn't have any other bargaining chips. Hannibal has to know it. Has to.
but his expression is still unreadable. Still perfectly composed, as he paces across the room, gently strokes his thumb along Will's jaw. Will bites the inside of his cheek hard enough to draw blood in an attempt not to flinch.
Fine.
There's something off in Hannibal's tone, but Will ignores it. He can learn to ignore anything if he tries hard enough. He can learn to fake affection for the red-eyed monster after all.
Chapter 3. Cannon and Dee.
Do they have any idea of when he'll wake up?
Jack all but collapses into the sofa across from Will's hospital bed, pinching the bridge of his nose. Alana presses her lips into a thin line and shakes her head.
Do they even know what's wrong with him?
She shakes her head again. The right side of his brain is swollen, and he's running a high fever. That's it.
Shit.
Jack fumbles with a tab of Alka-Seltzer and a bottle of water. Alana refolds Will's clammy hands in hers. Will sleeps on. In the distance, one floor and five hospital rooms away, in the music therapy room of the psychiatric ward, Dr. Hannibal Lecter plays Bach's Goldberg Variations on the dusty old piano, thinking, debating, moving his way through the areas with an image of Will Graham framed like a dead insect specimen, limbless, helpless, dancing behind his eyelids, like a shadow suspended on dust and sunlight.
Dies Irae, Part 2 of the Goldberg Variation Series. Warnings for canon-typical violence and cannibalism, mutilation, aftermath of torture, amputation, abduction, manipulation, Stockholm Syndrome, mental health issues, body horror, body worship, amputation kink, gore, forced autophagia, non-consensual drug abuse, non-consensual body modification, mind control, ableism and codependency. Chapter 1. Nocient 1. Lent. Hannibal leaves for work on a Monday morning and does not return at 6:30 as was routine. Will refuses to panic or to even think about what it might mean, and instead closes his eyes and hums Bach to himself. Maybe there had been an appointment that had run overtime. Maybe he was caught in traffic. 8 o'clock comes and goes. Maybe Hannibal had been called in by Jack to help with the case. 9 o'clock comes and goes. Will is hungry. He stares at the door to the hallway beyond the bedroom longingly. There was a time when he might have wished for the ability to just roll out of bed and walk to the kitchen to make his own food. But, in truth, all Will wants right now is for Hannibal to walk through the door and carry him down to dinner. 11 o'clock comes and goes. Maybe Hannibal had been in a car accident. Will falls asleep and dreams of someone playing Tiersen on a piano made of human bones. When the police find him on Wednesday, Will is lying unconscious from dehydration and starvation in the big master bed. The officer to find him is a new female recruit. She screams, assuming he is dead, and she just stumbled upon the last known victim of Hannibal the Cannibal. Later, thinking back on it, Will can't blame her. They call an ambulance once someone finally thinks to check his pulse, and they realize he's actually alive. Later, thinking back on it, Will wishes he had been dead. It would have been easier. Will wakes up on Friday in a hospital bed. His first reaction is to panic, taking a rushed survey of his body to see if Hannibal had taken anything else, and if that was why he was wearing a familiar gray-blue hospital gown with an IV drip. And then he realizes that he is in an actual hospital room. In an actual hospital. He is still as whole as he can be. No new scars or empty spaces occupied by the sensations of phantom limbs. Oh. Will swallows down hard and forces himself to relax into the stiff hospital pillow. A nurse comes in and smiles at seeing him awake. Her hands are cold, but they feel good against his suddenly overheated skin when she brushes her fingertips over his IV port to make sure he hadn't dislodged it in his panic. He fights the urge to lean into her touch. "Good morning, Mr. Graham." He grimaces back stiffly. "Hello." "Do you know where you are?" A thought crosses his mind, a whisper in Hannibal's voice.
"Your name is Will Graham, and you are in Baltimore, Maryland."
Alana is Will's first visitor. Her eyes are rimmed red from tears, and her mascara is smeared when she arrives. But she forces a wobbly smile anyway.
"How are you feeling?"
Her voice is hoarse, too, and her hands hover awkwardly on the edge of the bed, like she wanted to hold a hand that wasn't there. Her eyes skim over his body, trying to avoid staring or seeming rude, before she settles her gaze on his forehead.
"Good," he lies.
He doesn't know how he feels, actually, other than sort of hollow and empty. "As good as can be expected." Alana looks like she's about to burst into tears again, and Will has to fight a sudden strange urge to roll his eyes. Her voice cracks.
"I have your dogs. I'll talk to your doctor about getting you out to go visit them."
"That would be nice." It's another lie. He no longer cares about the dogs. They feel like part of some past life.
"Good. Good."
Awkward silence settles between them. Will is tempted to ask after Hannibal, because the room doesn't have a TV, and no one in the hospital will answer his questions. But he is afraid of how Alana might react.
"Do you know what you'll do when you get released?"
Alana asks hesitantly. "I'm not going to be released. Not any time in the near future, at least." It's the truth. Hannibal had made sure that Will was fully dependent on him. He couldn't feed himself. He couldn't get out of bed by himself. He couldn't survive on his own. But apparently, Hannibal had never accounted for the possibility that one day they might be separated. With a few years of extensive therapy, Will could learn how to function as he was. But he would never be fully independent. He would always need someone to care for him.
I would be glad to help.
"No, Alana." It comes out more forcefully than he intends. But he can see the way she stares. She's frightened. His scars and missing parts are horrifying to her, like he has been broken from whole. Some days, when Hannibal had arranged him neatly in bed, or his chair, in the dining room, or on the bench in the garden, Will used to imagine that this was how it would feel like to be a piece of art, constantly formed and shaped to the whims of a sculptor. He was marble and clay that had been carved away. Hannibal had assured him. To Hannibal, at least, his missing parts had been beautiful. Alana leaves without another word. Chapter 2. Avec and Toment.
"May I sleep next to you?"
Hannibal asked, sitting down on the right side of the big bed in his ridiculous silk pajamas. Always so damn polite, like Will's answers actually mattered to him. Will nodded and bit down on his tongue to keep from saying anything. Hannibal had been listening contentedly to Tamerlan on the speakers all day, and that always meant good things. Massages to alleviate the ache in Will's bones from lying down near constantly, warm meals of Will's favorite foods in the dining room, open blinds and curtains in the bedroom to soak in the summer sunlight. He wasn't going to risk that good mood in favor of useless back talk. Hannibal smiled in return and slid between the sheets.
"May I hold you?"
Bile threatened to rise in the back of Will's throat if he lingered on the idea for too long, but he closed his eyes and nodded again. Hannibal was warm as he pulled Will into his arms. It was disturbingly familiar and almost comforting to feel Hannibal curled up at his back, arms around Will's chest to hold him close. Hannibal leaned down to press a gentle kiss to the scar of the stump of Will's left arm before settling back into bed. Will took a few steadying deep breaths and let his body relax into Hannibal's embrace. For the first time in a long time, Will slept without nightmares.
You are beautiful, Will. So beautiful.
Will huffed a laugh and pressed the side of his face into the soft, sun-warmed bedsheets, preening under Hannibal's careful attention. It was a good morning, an arabesque one morning, and Hannibal had been only gentle and softly affectionate so far, in a way that promised safety and no danger. Hannibal kissed his way down Will's body slowly, from where he'd been tracing Will's jaw with his lips to the scarred end of his right arm. Will tensed in reflex, sudden anxiety clearing his mind and dissipating the drowsy mood from the mild sedatives that had been hidden in his breakfast. He was used to Hannibal telling him he was beautiful, to studying him like an interesting sculpture, to even some strange perversion of body worship, but this physicality was new. Up to now, he'd never paid any particular attention to the ways he'd shaped Will, to his scars and missing pieces, the broken little remains he had left. Hannibal only kissed the scar and smiled reassuringly. Relax, Will. How could he relax? How was he supposed to?
Will,
Hannibal repeated more forcefully.
You are beautiful.
I'm broken. His voice sounded harsher than he meant it to.
No, Will. You are art.
I'm fading, unstable, lost, broken, a shadow of self-loathing and too much empathy. He'd been broken even before Hannibal had left him with only scars and stumps.
I'm not. Marble is a precious material, you know,
murmured Hannibal. He turned his head to kiss Will's scar again. A whole block of marble may be worth thousands of dollars. Will inhaled sharply and tried to tune out the physical sensations as Hannibal trailed kisses across his bare chest to the stump of his other arm.
Of course, when you cut and take away from that marble, do you reduce the value?
It took Will a moment to realize Hannibal expected an answer.
Yes,
he said hesitantly.
So you believe Michelangelo made a mistake in carving the statue of David?
Hannibal laughed softly.
What I take away from you makes you no less whole.
It occurred to Will that he shouldn't have been feeling flattered, that he should be repulsed, that Hannibal was a twisted killer who stole from his autonomy and his body. That there had once been a time where he'd had to force himself to pretend Hannibal was still his friend and not some sort of monster, when now he had to force himself to remember that under the soft orchestral music and the comparisons to art, there was the Chesapeake Ripper and a man who cut off his legs to keep him from running. The volunteer is young and new, maybe 15 years old, 16 at most, dark hair and dark-eyed, pretty and innocent, and trying her hardest not to stare at the stumps where Will's arms and legs had once been, like it made Will more comfortable somehow to have her stare everywhere but at his scars. Will almost wonders why in hell anyone would assign a volunteer to read to him, but decides to let it go. This girl suits his plans fine enough. She doesn't know anything about him, not even his first name. And he sits through their first two meetings patiently and asks to be read Camus's The Plague. It was a book that Hannibal had read to him during his good moods, though Hannibal had been translating on his own from the original French. It was a book that held only memories of opera on vinyl in the background, Hannibal setting Will in a comfortable nest of blankets, in a chair in front of the fireplace to read to him. Admittedly, this girl was a far cry from Hannibal, but it was easy enough to imagine the words in his voice, the smoothness of his accent on the French names instead of her stammering. The doctor glanced up at the statue of the Republic, then said that he did not know if he was using the language of reason, but said he knew he was using the language of the facts as everyone could see them.
That's enough, Will interrupts.
The girl closes the book, her fingers marking the page. Are you sure? We still have 30 minutes.
Will smiles at her sheepishly and hopes it doesn't look too faked. Actually, I was wondering if we could just talk for a while. I don't get many visitors. The girl sighs in relief. That's okay. What do you want to talk about? Do you know what happened to Hannibal the Cannibal? That serial killer everyone was talking about a while ago? I used to be a cop, before all this, Will adds hastily. I was following that case, and the home I was in before, but this hospital wouldn't give me a TV in my room. He got ruled insane, I think. The girl narrowed her eyes, ever so slightly, like she was still suspicious, despite his explanation. They put him in the hospital for the criminally insane. Will struggles to keep his face steady at that, nodding.
Thank you. Hannibal is still alive, then. He isn't sure quite what to do with that knowledge or how he really feels about it.
The girl is still staring at him suspiciously, so Will fakes a smile. Can I ask you something else?
Sure.
Do you like classical music?